Hello and welcome to Messages at BBC. In these messages, you'll hear from professors, staff, guest speakers, as well as students. These messages were spoken and recorded on campus at Boise Bible College. If you'd like to check out Boise Bible College, please see our website at boisebible.edu.
Man, it is a blast to the past being up here. I mean, not you guys. All of you are different. I don't recognize hardly any of you guys. But Faber never changes. No, it's good to be with you. My name's Andrew. I graduated from BBC with a seven-year bachelor's degree in youth ministry. So call that the long way around education path. Any of you part-time students, I feel you. I was there. No, it brings back a lot of fond memories being on campus. I mean, we didn't have the automatically locking doors and the visitor passes back then. We were very vulnerable, I suppose. But I think about the impromptu worship sessions and the deep conversations that we had with professors who always had time for us. And the late night rehearsals in the piano rooms with my girlfriend, if you know what I mean. I'm kidding. Ooh. Let's be honest, I didn't have any girlfriends. But I will never forget a evening drama class I had with your very own Russell Grove one night when we finished preparing for our skit a little bit early, and so we had a little extra time to fill, and Grove regaled us with stories of his very own good old college days. Apparently, your professor was quite the prankster. Nope. Yeah, together. Mm-hmm. So I left class that night in a bit of a mid-college crisis because I had almost gotten to my junior year without so much as swapping someone's toothpaste with mayonnaise. I hadn't even like hidden a backpack or a whoopee cushion or anything. So I was like having a bit of an identity crisis, feeling like I needed to leave a legacy before I left. And so I grabbed my roommate, inspired again by yours, you're at Russell Grove, and we proceeded into the first unoccupied dorm room that we could find and proceeded to empty the contents of the dorm room into the soccer field. And this wasn't like the junk bros. We didn't just chuck it out there. We were very careful, but we reset the bed. We like fluffed the pillows. We reorganized the bookshelf. I think we even ran an extension cord and plugged in a lamp and had the whole room recreated out in the soccer field. And I went to bed that night I felt more accomplished than when I handed in my final paper for ABD. I was feeling pretty good until the next morning when the wanted posters went up and Rich Shell launched a full-scale investigation into what became known as the BBC Bandits. And I felt like I should clear my conscience with you before we tried to talk about Jesus or truth or anything important today. So thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here. I want one thing, aside from the mischief that I learned at BBC that I took from my time here, was I learned a lot about what Jesus go. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, favor never changes. I learned a lot about what Jesus was like during my time here. And that's what I love about what you guys are doing in these chapels for this semester is just looking at what Jesus was like and how we can be more like him. And I want to talk to you today about one of the more neglected aspects, I believe, of Jesus's personality. See, we like righteous anger Jesus flipping tables at the temple, and we like transfiguration Jesus with light beams shooting out of his eyes. But I want to talk to you about the gentleness of Jesus today. Let's see if you've been doing your memory work, but the fruit of the Spirit is gentleness. That's where, okay, extra credit. We're going to be talking about gentleness today, and I know you guys like a good word study, so let's take a look at gentleness in the Greek. Proutes, which means weak, feeble, fragile. Here's a quote from the famous historian Heraclitus. Gentleness is by far the lamest of all fruits. Basically, wimpiness is next to godliness. Man, hopefully your time here has taught you not to trust people like me or Heraclitus. But isn't that kind of what we think of? When we think of gentleness, I mean, if gentleness was an actual fruit of the Spirit, it would be a peach, right? Because if you squeeze a ripe one too firmly, they just dissolve in your hands. We get images of Jesus petting a baby lamb that come to mind. We just get this, like, it's synonymous in our minds with weakness. But gentleness actually is quite the opposite of weakness. Picture Dumbo. This word was to describe a mighty animal being brought under control. Picture Dumbo on a leash. An elephant, you know, that you're just taking on a walk around the block. So big, so powerful, that if it took a wrong step, it would crush you. No, gentleness actually implies power. I want to show you a photograph. This is one of the most seen photographs in the world. It's been on the covers of magazines and newspapers, seen by hundreds of thousands of people. And do you know why? It's a soldier feeding a kitten. It's adorable, right? No, this guy, he literally has a gun strapped to his side. He is in the trenches of combat, fighting a life or death battle, and he takes a kitty break. And he feeds this two-week-old kitten some of his powdered milk. I mean, it's so cute. Some of you girls right now have a pent-up awe inside of you. Just let it out. Yeah, there. I knew it. I could see it. Your tears were welling up in your eyes. It's this adorable photo. The man in the photo is named Frank, and he actually tells the story behind this famous picture. One night, after the Marines had gone to bed, out of the darkness, they heard the sound of a crying cat. And one of the soldiers got so annoyed that he marched out of the tent and he shot the cat dead. See, you're not keeping it inside anymore. It's good. This is a safe place. Let it all out. What he didn't know was that this cat had just had kittens. Yeah. That were now orphans. Yep. So Frank and another soldier adopted the two kittens and attempted to save them. Frank's kitty survived, but the other soldier rolled over his during his sleep and crushed it. Yep. A lot of emotions today in BBC Chapel. You're never going to invite me back. I knew it would happen. Here's what we learned. Why did Frank's cat survive? It's not because he was weak. It's because he was gentle. He's a soldier. He is the literal picture of power. But he uses his power not to destroy, but to care for the kitten. That's going to be our working definition of gentleness today. Using your power to lift others up, to care for others. These other two men really show us what the opposite of gentleness looks like, right? One soldier uses his power to destroy on purpose, whereas the other one is just careless with it, and it has the same end result. And we know what the opposite of gentleness looks like and feels like all too well, don't we? It's everywhere. Man, our country's famous for it. It's the American way. Boys will be boys. Girls just talk that way. Walk it off. If you want to know what the opposite of gentleness looks like, you need look no further than social media platform of choice. It's a desolate wasteland of harsh words and attacked opinions, right? If you want to know what the opposite of gentleness sounds like, go for a leisurely drive down Glenwood at 5 o'clock this afternoon. If you are the guy laying your horn on for like full 5 seconds, take that BBC decal off the back of your car. No, the opposite of gentleness, the opposite of gentleness is carelessness. And it has infected almost every aspect of our lives. We use our power and we use our position to push others out of our way, to tear others down, all to put ourselves up a little bit higher above them. But when we look at the life of Jesus, we see something very different. And one of the most beautiful examples of the gentleness of Jesus comes out of John chapter 8. Jesus arrived at the temple early one morning to teach, not so unlike where we find ourselves today. And as the first rays of sunlight started to illuminate the courtyard, all that could be heard was the sound of birds singing and the master's voice carrying through the crowd. until suddenly there was a scream. A gap formed in the crowd, and a woman, barely clothed, is being dragged by her hair in front of everyone and then thrown down in front of Jesus. Suddenly, this church service had just become an execution. Everyone went silent. All eyes are on her. The accusers standing and before them were dressed in royal, religious-looking robes, dripping with prestige and power. And one of the men speaks up and says, "Teacher," his voice just full of sarcasm, "we caught her in the act of adultery. The law tells us to stone such women. What do you say?" And there's the trap. You see, they knew Jesus' teachings on mercy. So would he go against his own words or break the law? This question comes with a threat. Kill her or give us a reason to kill you. And look at what Jesus does. He doesn't even acknowledge them. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. He's like, hold that thought. And we're not told what he wrote. I'm sure some of you have written papers about it. Good for you. Maybe you can inform me later. And when they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. This was not what they expected. This was not how they were thinking this would go down. And here's the thing about gentleness. It's kind of hard to pin down. We talk about things like generosity or honesty. Like, stuff comes to mind. We get a picture. We kind of know, like, we can almost predict what the practices will be from that particular sermon, from that particular preacher. But gentleness is a bit more spatial. And yet, this powerful interaction shows us a lot about what gentleness looks like and feels like. The first thing I want you to notice is, where does Jesus spend the majority of the story? Did you catch it? He's on the ground with the woman. He's not lording his authority over her like her accusers. He's down there with her. And that really speaks to the posture that gentleness takes. If you want to be gentle, you've got to lower yourself. You've got to stoop down, get on someone's level. And we see this not just here, but throughout the entire ministry of Jesus. You wouldn't catch him in the throne rooms of kings or kicking it with Caesars. He was hanging out with high school dropouts, with prostitutes, alcoholics and sex addicts, the racial minorities, homeless people, the sick, the disabled. These are the people that filled Jesus' schedule. When is the last time someone like that made it on our calendar? Jesus spent a lot of time on the ground. That's why he came, right? Another memory verse I'm sure you've got down, Philippians 2, 5 through 8. "Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God something to be grasped, but he rather emptied himself by taking on the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men." One of the best places that we can practice gentleness is on the ground. And I want to tell you this morning that there are people in your life that would benefit from simply your presence. But subconsciously, we have written them off because we've placed ourselves above them in some kind of silly social hierarchy or scramble for status. That they have become invisible to us because we have placed ourselves above them. We have got to lower ourselves. For some of you, non-traditional students, maybe this is your own child. Maybe it's the widow down at the Emerson house. It could be someone in this very room that for whatever ridiculous reason, in your mind, they're not good enough for you anymore. We don't see that anywhere in the way Jesus interacted with people. He was always getting down on their level. But see what he does next. He doesn't stay down there. He doesn't just play tic-tac-toe in the sand the whole time. When the men start closing in with stones in their hands, that is when Jesus takes a stand. That's when he gets up and says, "Are you without sin? What you doing with that stone then, boy?" That's when he gets up. And I think what we can learn from this is it's not good enough to just not be racist, to just not be sexist, to just not be homophobic. It's so easy to look at the story and forget that there is an entire crowd of people that do nothing. They're just spectators on the sidelines. And maybe they would even say, "Well, I mean, I wouldn't have thrown a big stone at her, or I wouldn't have even picked up a rock." Maybe they would say, "Well, you know, love the adulterer, not the adultery," right? But they just sit there. They don't get involved. And that's the thing about gentleness is gentleness requires, it implies action. If Frank had just held the kitten really, really carefully for a very long time, what would have happened? It just would have died. No, he had to do something. He had to get his hands dirty. And that's what we see here. Jesus takes a stand. And maybe you can't end racism, but when's the last time you hung out with someone that looked different than you or sounded different than you? Maybe you can't end world hunger, but you can share a meal. And I guarantee that there's a people group that you see, that you pass by every single day, and they are one of the most abused and neglected peoples on the planet. Do you know who they are? It's children. Abraham Lincoln said, "You never stand so tall as when you stoop down to help a child." And similarly, Jesus said, "Whoever welcomes one of these little ones in my name welcomes me." I'm here to tell you this morning, youth ministry is not just for youth majors. It's not just a stepping stone on the path to being an associate's pastor. It is the call of every church-going, Bible-believing Christian to disciple the next generation, to use our position and power to lift up the little ones in our life and raise them to be the church. It's not just for our wives to do. It's not just for our students to do, it is for us to do. So what little ones can you lift up? What powerless can you lend a helping hand? Who could you mentor? Who could you welcome? You know the interesting thing about children and why I think Jesus used them so often to describe the ministry of the kingdom of God is because children demand gentleness from us. They inspire it. They bring it out of us. Do you ever notice what you do when a child walks into the room? Practice number one, you lower yourself. Oftentimes we pick them up. Man, there's something about kids that our hearts inherently is designed for and needs. When's the last time you lifted up a little one? This is a weird practice, but get around some kids. You need it, and so do they. It takes a village to raise a child. And honestly, we have lost a lot of villagers over the years. So will we step up and will we stand up on behalf of the marginalized and the abused and the neglected and the unseen in our world? Let's see how the story ends. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time. Notice the older ones first, until only Jesus was left, with the woman still standing there. And he asked her, "Where'd everyone go? Woman, where are they? No one has condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." See, unlike the Pharisees, the accusers, who likely tricked, trapped, condemned, and sentenced this woman, Jesus simply asks a question and then listens. Man, how many of our arguments and conflicts would be resolved if we figured out how to do that one thing well. Jesus was famous for his teaching, but do you know what he was maybe more famous for? His questions. How many times was he maybe almost crucified or killed, and he just did what he did here? He asks a question, and it diffuses the entire conflict. Take an interest. Ask a question. Genuinely listen. And you will start to experience the gentleness of Jesus in your life. See, gentleness is much more about what we don't say than about what we do say. It's about not just sitting there with our eyes glazed over, thinking about what we're going to say the moment they shut up. It's about not looking at what all the hundreds of people we don't care about say while our daughter and our wife are trying to talk to us. Gentleness listens, and no one did this better than my old Life of Christ professor, Dale Cornett. He is one of the most studied and intelligent men that I've ever met. He's used more highlighters in his lifetime than any of us well in this room combined, and every color, mind you, and they all had a system. He was a certified genius. And yet, I would sit in his classrooms, and lecture after lecture, it always happened, some random kid would raise their hand, interrupt him, and challenge him, or try and correct him in the middle of his lecture. And if he wanted to, he could rip them to shreds. But here's what I learned from my professor, Dale Cornett. He always responded with a kind word and a listening ear. In fact, I asked Cornett to mentor me for a season, and he kindly obliged. And when we sat down for our first session, he asked me, like, what are you hoping to get out of this time? And I said, man, I just want to learn your gentleness. And that's how we learn gentleness from Jesus. We look at his life. We see it, we feel it, we know it, and we can do it. And one of my favorite pictures is actually one of the moments we often leave out of the crucifixion story. It comes out of John 18. So Judas came to the garden, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees. They're carrying torches, lanterns, weapons. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, what do you want? Who are you looking for? Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. You got him. I am he. And they drew back and fell to the ground. That is power. That is position. Sometimes we get this picture in our head of a helpless man being dragged to the cross against his will. But that is not the case at all. Jesus marched out to the angry mob that came to arrest him. And at the very acknowledgement that he was indeed who they were looking for, they fell down. That is power. But look at what happens just a few moments later. Then the men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. I imagine it took a moment to get their courage back. Maybe someone had to poke him with a spear first and like, I think it's okay. And with that, one of Jesus' companions is like, okay, so it's going down for real. Reached out for his sword, drew it, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. A distraction. This was his chance. Jesus and the disciples can make a break for it. I'm imagining that was what this guy was thinking the moment he took his sword out. And yet, Jesus doesn't go anywhere. He stays right there. And he stoops down to the ground. He picks up the man's severed ear. And he performs his final miracle before going to the cross. That is gentleness. I want you to picture yourself in the position of this woman for a moment. Would you close your eyes? You've been caught in the act, red-handed. There's no denying it. Your sin is out there for the whole world to see. You know you're guilty. So does everyone else. All eyes are on you. And you can hear the men approaching. You can picture the stones in their hands, and you're just waiting for that first blow to fall. But then there's Jesus on the ground with you. And he lifts up your face and says, "Neither do I condemn you. Now go and leave your life of sin." May the gentleness of Jesus be with you this morning, and would you share it? And would the gospel fall fresh on your life today? Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for listening today. Boise Bible College exists to raise up leaders for the church, where we value scholarship, humility, innovation, and community. For more information about Boise Bible College, please see boisebible.edu.